podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Thanks for listening. Here's today's message.
Well, good morning, Bridgeway. It's great to see you here today. So good that we can be gathered together. New year, new decade, and my hope for us as we embark on this journey that over the next several weeks, we'll really have a better understanding of what it means for God to really build into our imperfect families. And it's all about family over the next few weeks. And so I just want to get kind of an idea, maybe just a quick survey of who's in the room today. And so would you do me a favor? Would you just raise your hand? Everyone participate in this. If you're here today and you're a parent, if you have kids at home, just raise your hand for a moment. I want to see who's with parents in the house, lots of parents. Okay, now next group of people. How many of you here today, you're not parents? Raise your hand, proud. Freedom, right? Like you got that going for you. Maybe next group of people, you're not parents, but you hope to be someday. How about you guys? Some in the room. And then last category of people, how many of you, you're here today and you show up each week hoping that your pastor will give you some sort of like biblical loophole for how you get like a trade-in policy for the kids you have, right? Like, how do I get a trade-in on these kids, right? It's not in there, sorry to say. But we've really kind of devoted this time to talk about family. And this series is far more than just a talk about parenting or a talk about marriage, but really a talk about kind of the family unit. And the reality is how we handle those relationships matter to God. How we handle the relationships inside of our home and in our extended family. And here's the reality, when it comes to families, everyone's got one. Like, everyone's included in this conversation. And I don't mean to break it to you, but the truth is every one of our families are imperfect. And I want to talk about what it means to really embrace that as a family. If you're new or visiting, or maybe you haven't met all of the Allbachs, this is the Allbach family. There's an imperfect family for you. The seven of us, Sean and I, we raised a basketball team, five beautiful kids. You can see our big man in the middle there. And my five kids range from 13 to 21. Anne Marie, Brennan, Aislinn, Bryson, and Braylon. Don't worry, there's no quiz later afterwards. But this is a picture of us over the holidays. We took some time as a family and served together down at Mel Trotter and had a really good time together doing that. I've kind of realized, though, that kind of the larger family is a bit uncommon these days, and I've kind of moved and transitioned, Sean and I have in our parenting, from maybe that infant young baby stage to now we've got these emerging adults that we're trying to lead and guide in life. And we look back, some of those younger days were really quite special. In fact, we would hear all sorts of things, because five kids, that's a lot. And I remember we would be on vacation together or even just downtown, and we would get the strangest looks with five kids, right? In fact, probably the most common question Sean and I heard was this. Someone would ask us, are those all your kids? I'm proud to say they're all my kids. But back in the day, I would start saying things like, what do you mean, all these kids? Oh, that one kid, those four are mine, but I kidnapped that one. Like, you should probably call CPS on me or something, you know? But they're all mine, and I love them all, and we're kind of on this journey as an imperfect family to embrace what God has for us. I want to ask you this morning to think about the role of parenting. Let me ask you this. What does it mean to be successful as a parent? I mean, what does successful parenting look like? How do you know, parents, if you've hit the bullseye as a parent? And maybe you've got little kids now, and so I want you to fast forward. What's it going to look like? How will you know what success is in 5, 10, 15, 20 years of raising kids? And maybe if your kids are grown and they're no longer in the home, you still have a parenting role, but now you look back, and what were some of the things 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago that kind of marked what you meant to be successful as a parent? We could go around the room, and we could probably get lots of interesting comments. And in fact, let me just twist the question for a moment. Let me ask you, what does the world say is successful parenting? I mean, what are the cultural kind of cues around us say, hey, you're really hitting in the mark when you're doing this as a parent or as a family? I'll offer a few, and you could probably argue, the list isn't exhaustive, but I would say that the system I see around us culturally begs a parent to say, you know what the markers are? Success in parenting is this, that you raise, number one, well-rounded kids, right? And then number two, you raise kids that have a great education. And then three, you raise kids that are happy, right? Like, isn't that what our culture wants, is happy, well-rounded, educated kids? You look at the kind of the system in place and well-rounded, right? We have so many opportunities for our kids at a very young age, right? I mean, from kinder music to community ed soccer, what's the point? The point is exposure. Get your kids well-rounded to enter the world. And then education, I mean, you look at, especially as education grows, and we've got honors courses and AP courses and foreign languages and everything about preparing them for the next level of education. And then happy, right? Like, isn't that like what culture just screams at us? I mean, if anything, you know, make sure your kids are always happy, well-adjusted. We sometimes will kind of couch that as mental health. Like, we don't want them to be depressed at all, so make them healthy kids. And I was thinking about that because if you think about it, I mean, is that really what we want as parents? I mean, well-rounded. Think about that for a moment. Maybe think about it this way. Maybe some of you do hiring in the place of work that you're involved in. I get to be involved in the hiring process here. Is well-rounded really what you want in the employee you hire? I would beg to differ. I would say no. I'd say when I'm looking to hire someone, I want someone that is exceptional, someone that is gifted in a few really unique skills that they have to do the job that we're looking to fill them on. Don't need them to be well-rounded in everything. Or maybe the other idea, how about education? Now, I'll tell you, I'm all for education. I'm involved in a doctoral program trying to wrap that up here in the next couple years, and I'm all for education, but I'll tell you what, I'd take someone with integrity over education every single time. And happiness, right? Like, isn't happiness so bizarre that we strive for that? And yet, happiness is really a lot to do about external, right? I mean, happiness is oftentimes about the happenings, right? I mean, if things are happening well, if you have good things going on in your life, then of course you're happy. But if things aren't going well, then you're not so happy. In fact, I think what I would want for my kids and the people that I have any influence over is that they had joy. That they knew that the joy of the Lord is their strength in good times and in bad. When you think about what the culture says and what God really wants from us as parents, it's kind of a gut check and a reality as to what this task of parenting is. In fact, especially when you look at the words that Jesus gives. In fact, look at these words in Matthew 16. These are the red letters. This is Jesus' words. He says, "What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul?" You see what he's saying there? What good will it be for someone to be well-rounded, extreme levels of education, happy, and yet forfeit the most important thing, which is their soul? I want to challenge you over these next few weeks. What if we kind of let go of this idea of perfection? What if as families we just embraced our imperfections and said, you know what, I'm going to just be content with maybe the imperfections in my family, and I'm going to strive for faithfulness. Because I think the most important thing that you can do as a parent is this. Success is planting spiritual roots in the next generation. This, to me, is hitting the mark. And this is where I want everyone to feel engaged in this idea, because this is true if you're a parent planting spiritual roots, but this is true if you're a grandparent. That your task is not done. Or if you're an aunt or an uncle and you've got all these other relatives around you, you can plant spiritual roots. If you're here this morning, you don't have any kids, but you live next door and you see these kids playing in the yard all the time, that you can plant spiritual roots in their life. Maybe there's a single mom in your workplace or a single dad, and you can come alongside of them and in those kids' lives have an influence of planting spiritual roots. I see so often today there's this race, and this generation coming up is so in tune with getting what's kind of in front of them. And maybe just as a community of faith, you know, I want to just say that if the emerging generation has it all and yet they don't have faith, then I believe as a community we have failed. So how do we do this? In fact, in this day and age, it's really tough for kind of this emerging generation to find their place in the church. In fact, a lot of really smart people are studying this and trying to understand how is it that this emerging generation in many ways tells us that they care about their spiritual life, but they're not so keen or connected to the church. I've got colleagues and a really good friend of mine, Steve Argue, at Fuller Seminary, that's trying to understand this. And one of the things they're finding is that the church needs to actually grow younger. When you look at the general population of 18 to 29-year-olds, in our world today, they represent about 20% of the demographic. And yet, less than 10% of that group actually finds the faith community of any value or interest to them. They've kind of completely written it off. And you can look at this in a lot of different ways. In fact, that generation can be kind of classified as 18 to 29 or even 23 to 30. But they've done research on this group. In fact, Lifeway did a really interesting study of those that have sort of exited the church and their reasons why. And some of this might just be old news to you, but I think this is a wake-up call for the church. Those in that age group of 23 to 30, the reason they've dropped out, number one reason is they move away to college and they just stop attending. 34% cited that. Or church members seem judgmental or hypocritical. 32% said that. 29%, I just didn't feel connected in my church. 25, I disagree with the church's stance on political or social issues. And the last one, 24%, my work responsibilities prevented me from attending. Now, I'm kind of a simple guy. When I look at a list like this and I think about the people in my home and I think about many of the people in your home that I know, I look at this list and I see this opportunity to not only plant spiritual roots, but to make sure as a faith community that we're growing them really deep so that these aren't the reasons that the people that we love and care about drop out from the church. Some of you are looking at me this morning like, whoa, Pastor, man, this is heavy stuff. I mean, come on, we've had all this snow and all this ice. It's been stressful. Come on, I just came here to church this morning for a little pick-me-up. You know, don't scare me with these statistics. What I want to offer you this morning instead is hope for every one of us to have this intention about this generation coming up. In fact, I want to turn to one verse. This is one of these messages this morning. We're going to look at a lot of different scripture. And so if you have your Bibles, I'd love to have you turn to Psalm chapter 71. Psalm 71 for just a quick minute. And I'll tell you, I read these words a few weeks ago. And I read these words right after I had had a meeting with my financial advisor. I was sitting down with this person to look over kind of my goals and my retirement plans. And don't worry, I'm not retiring for a long time. It's a long ways off still. But I'm kind of at that point of life where I'm looking at kind of the back half and just kind of wondering, you know, what will it look like? What could retirement look like for me someday? And I was just thinking about, you know, like, what do I do when I'm retired? Like, what will I invest my time in? And I was thinking about this message, and I was thinking about this generation coming up. And I read these words from David. And this is a prayer. Psalm 71 is a prayer by David. He says these words in verse 18. He says, even when I am old and gray, do not forsake me, my God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your mighty acts to all who are to come. You see what he's saying there? Till I am old and gray. Some of you are like, hey, Pastor, newsflash, you're already old, and you don't have any hair, but you know the little bit you have is pretty gray. I get that. But you see what he's saying there? Even when I'm old and gray, you know what he's saying? He's saying, let me live longer. Let me live longer. Don't forsake me. Till what? Till I declare this power of yours to the next generation. You see what he's not saying? He's not saying, God, help me to live longer just so that I don't outlive my retirement assets, right? Like, make sure that nest egg is enough for me to enjoy, you know, kind of the American dream of retirement. He's not saying that. He's not saying, don't let me live longer so I can just play another round of golf, you know, or so I can run another Ironman. He's saying the purpose never changes to declare this power of God to the next generation. Don't forsake me. Don't leave me. And I think when we do this, even if we get a whole lot of other things wrong in our imperfect homes and in our imperfect parenting, that there's this opportunity to declare to that generation. You know, this really starts at home. But I want to say to you this morning that even if you don't have young kids or kids in your home, that there's really an opportunity to plant spiritual roots in the lives of others everywhere you go. In fact, the church is sort of a built-in place where you can always invest in the next generation. And so if you're here this morning, you're like, well, I don't have any kids. I'm kind of done planting. Well, you know, here in this place, we have about, on average, about 200 kids that come through this building every single weekend. And we don't do that as daycare. We do that to impress upon them this opportunity of a life with God through Jesus. And you can partner with us. We have a fantastic children's ministry, J-Seekers ministry. You can come alongside of Michelle and Christine, and you too can build into this next generation. Or you can come hang out with middle schoolers and high school kids with Pastor Justin. He just makes it fun and exciting for the kids, and I'm so grateful for his influence and his pastoring of these kids. And you too can come alongside of that ministry. There's no shortage of opportunity here in the church. Maybe in some ways you just kind of pick some informal ways of coming alongside of people. Maybe you see some families that, you know what, like, I've got a heart for them, and I want to help them and their kids and make sure that they know that they've got other people around them in the church that care for them. I tell you, Sean and I have been so blessed over the years and just raising these kids in this church and just knowing that we've had so many families come alongside of our kids. Some families have come alongside of our kids that they have kids of their own. And they're just like, hey, we love your kids, and so we want to pour into them. We want to have a relationship with them. We want to be another voice and influence in their life. And Sean and I are so grateful for that. We've got other families that they're kind of at the other end. Their kids are all out of the house, and they make sure that if Ron's traveling or if Sean's traveling, that they kind of check in. Hey, is there anything we can kind of do for your kids or have them over for dinner? And we are just so blessed by that. But it always starts at home. So for the remainder of this message, I just want to talk about some ways in which we can do that. We can plant spiritual roots into this next generation. A couple ideas, a couple thoughts. The first thing I would say, especially to you who are parents, if you want to plant spiritual roots, then don't compromise your core convictions. Man, I'll tell you, it's hard as a parent these days, right? I think everything around us tells us, well, just compromise. You know, just give in. I mean, even the voices, right? Like, come on, Mom, everyone's doing it. Come on, Dad, everyone's curfew's later. Come on, it's all right. There's just this constant scream to compromise, to kind of let up. And here's the deal. When you have convictions, you're saying, you know, there's a right and there's a wrong, and I'm going to live as best as I can by the right way that God has instructed. I love reading the life of Moses in the Bible. In fact, Moses is probably my favorite character to study. And he has such humble beginnings if you look at the life of Moses. He's an Israelite, but he ends up in the house of Pharaoh. And you think about it, Moses has, as a child, kind of this dream childhood, right? I mean, he's given everything, the best education, the best opportunities, leadership at a young age. I mean, he really is what our culture says, right? He's well-rounded and well-educated and should be a happy kid. But he knows that his real heritage is with Israel. And he sees that his people, the Israelites, are under this horrible slavery by Egypt and by Pharaoh, by the very home that he's living in. And this injustice kind of just, it can't be bottled up, and it wells up inside of him, and he sees this injustice play out. He sees a slave master mistreat one of his own people. And this isn't talked about very often by pastors, but Moses actually kills that slave master. A lot of people like to talk about the leadership of Moses, and they just gloss over the fact that Moses was a murderer as well, a very imperfect person. And of course, Moses runs. He tries to run from God, but you know you can't do that. You can only run so far. You can never run away from God. And he runs directly into a burning bush. And this begins the trajectory now of Moses leading the people back to God. And he frees the people through the plagues, through leading them, crossing the Red Sea. And then Moses gets kind of the end of his life, and he realizes he's only got a few more messages left. They're only going to listen to me a little bit longer. And so as kind of his last challenge, his last plea with the people of God, he gathers them all together in tribes, the Bible says. Now, tribes is just a fancy way of saying families. He gathers all the families together, and he says these words to them in Deuteronomy chapter 6. I want you to see these words, this conviction. He says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength." And notice what he says. "These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children." I was thinking, you know, here's Moses. He's done such a great job of leadership. Think of all the things he could share with this group of people. Like, hey, here's the way to set up your economy. Here's the way to make sure that, you know, that there's justice in the land and it's civil. And instead he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." And then he says, impress this on your kids. The only way this is going to work is if the next generation is even more in love and more passionate about God than the one that's following him now. We call this, this is actually a prayer known as the Shema. And throughout centuries, people have prayed this prayer. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. I think it's so hard today to kind of hear that, to say that there is one God, that there are no other rival gods, that there are no other idols that compete for my family's attention. I think it's really hard to say that. I mean, just practically speaking, in a home, there's all these little rival gods that seem to well up, right? I mean, this God of, well, we got to keep up with the people around us, and we have to have and consume more. Or even the little gods of, well, you know what matters is really good grades or performance-driven. You've got to be excellent at athletics. There's all these rival gods that well up, and it's the person who never lets go of their core conviction that says, no, the most important thing is there is one God, and as a family, we're going to serve him with all of our heart. Some of you are thinking, well, I don't know, Pastor. I mean, you got to be careful, right? Like, you don't want to shove faith down your kids' throats. Maybe you've said that. Maybe you've heard that. And I get that. I'm very sensitive to that because I'm a pastor, and I've got 5 pastors' kids. And so I know how there's kind of this tendency to sort of drill it down and make sure they know it, and then they'll never forget it. But I'll tell you what I've learned over my experience as a pastor and as a father is I think as I've talked to the younger generation, as I've kind of talked to families and in my own home, I think the only time when that generation really feels like you're shoving it down their throat is when they look at your life and they see just a level of inauthenticity, right? That what you're preaching isn't what you're living. Because kids, better than anyone, they know a fake. They can tell. And so if you have an honest and vulnerable and transparent life of striving after God in your faith, then I think even if your kids maybe don't accept God at the same level you do, they still can respect all that you believe, all of it. So it's just simply saying, as a family, my number one core conviction is that we're going to do our best to honor God, to serve him. And because he created us, it should change the way we treat others around us. That's the first idea, is never compromise your core convictions. Second thing I would say to families is to raise the expectations. And by that I mean raise the expectation of what a faith-filled life offers. And that means that a faith-filled life has to be lived out in your own life. You have to live out faith in order for them to even have an idea of what an expectation would look like. I've shared many times that a big spiritual influence in my life was my grandma. She made sure that I went to church every single Sunday. And she would pick me up, and there was no arguing with my grandma. She was about this tall, and she was Russian, and you just did not argue with my grandma. And I kind of picked up this mentality as a kid, like, ugh, I have to go to church. And I think I missed a lot of what my grandma was trying to impress upon me. And now I'm a parent, and my kids will know that one of the things I hate to hear in the home is when my kids will say something like, well, I have to do that. And they all know every time they hear that I'll correct them. I'll say, no, you got to do that. Oh, I have to clean my room. No, you got to clean your room. Oh, I have to go to practice. No, you got to. It's a privilege. You got to do all these things. And I think even in my life, how much more powerful is that when you can share with someone that you're trying to raise right, if you can share with them that, you know what, it's not that you just get to, but you get to have a relationship with the creator of the universe. That is how big and yet at the same time how intimate God is and can be to every single person. You get to. You can have that. That can be your life. You can love him with all of your heart and all of your soul and all of your strength. And I wish that was all it took, but it takes even more. I think another thing I hear oftentimes today, and it sort of grates against me, and I'll hear it sort of when people are describing a work situation they don't really like, or maybe even a diet program. They'll say things like, well, showing up is half the work. You ever heard that? Well, showing up is half the work. And I really disdain that kind of view because I don't think it's true at all. I mean, really, showing up is half the work? Let's just say, for instance, you go to work tomorrow and, well, hey, boss, I showed up. I mean, isn't that half the work? Your boss would be like, no way, that's not half the work. That was like the minimal requirement to begin working on this thing that you're called to do. I mean, imagine in your home if spouses, if, if husbands and wives, well, I showed up in the marriage. You know, the other spouse would be like, great, now get to doing the laundry and the dishes, right? Like, you get all this other stuff that goes into being kind of a unit as a family. Showing up is not half the work. And especially when it comes to faith, it's going to take hard work to plant and raise these kids, these generation of people who have these spiritual roots. In fact, I love these words from Paul in Colossians 3. In fact, this is my life verse. I love this from Paul. He says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. I love this. Whatever you do, you know, like Paul's like as wide a spectrum as you can imagine. Whatever you do career-wise, whatever you do recreationally, whatever you do as parents, as grandparents, whatever you do, there's no day off, right? Work at it with all your heart. And not because you're trying to please the people around you. You're working, you're serving the Lord. Planting spiritual roots is hard work. You know, Jesus lived this out in such a true way. In fact, when you look at kind of the life of Jesus, it was a life of work, of honoring his Father. And I've been reading through the Gospels and just seeing how Jesus never once lowered the expectations. He never lowered the bar. In fact, when people would think they were doing it right and following Jesus, he would kind of take the bar up a notch higher and higher, just so that they always knew. I mean, he would say things like, those who want to follow me must deny themselves, right? I mean, the ultimate. Don't think of yourself and take up your cross and follow me. Those who want to gain their life have to lose it, have to lay it down for the people around him. Jesus was always bringing the bar up. I just want to ask you this morning, what would it look like for your family to raise the expectations in your spiritual life? Maybe what are some of the markers that you could put in your spiritual life? Maybe one of the markers you decide it's a new year, it's a new decade, and you think, you know what, maybe one of the things we need to add into our family is just this consistency of being involved in a community of faith. And this is family here. This is a place where everyone is welcome. And maybe you just say, you know, one of the markers we need to put in our home is just this consistency of being part of the community of faith. And not to check the box, not because we have to, but because we get to be a part of this family of believers that will encourage and be there with us through life. Maybe one of those things that you can kind of raise the expectation on is just how you serve together as a family. Maybe you pick a ministry, or maybe you pick a nonprofit that you really care about, a cause that you're driven by, and you say, you know what? For this year, our family is gonna learn as much and become invested as much as we can in this particular need. And the limits, it's limitless as to what you could define. And maybe you talk about this over lunch today as a family. This is where we're gonna spend our time this next year. Maybe it's helping a neighbor. You know, I mean, maybe it's shoveling, or it's coming alongside of someone, or just even giving someone the gift of your time. Just where can we as a family raise the expectation? Maybe it's around reading the Bible or involving a spiritual discipline in your home. I love how Pastor Mike talked about this You Belong Here board out in the entrance. In fact, I've been so keyed up on what this year means in the life of our church, our 20th anniversary. And yet, what I wanted to do is really capture this year in a way of what has God been doing in the life of our people. And that's what that little dot is on the timeline, is it's kind of placing your mark on the board and saying, you know what, my spiritual life started, or it was engaged here, or I was baptized in this place. And just saying, honestly, like, this is part of my journey. And maybe, again, you go as a family up to that board and you say, hey, where can we put our mark? And maybe you haven't made that decision. Maybe you haven't been baptized. Maybe your life hasn't been changed. And it becomes part of the journey and the conversation that you have together. Last thought, last idea that I would want to say is, if you want to plant spiritual roots, you need to keep it real. Like every day, faith needs to be this journey of just reality and keeping it real in your homes. I was thinking about how, maybe some of you remember this, some of you who are married might remember this. I was thinking about when Sean and I first got married, and we had to go through that painful process of wedding registry. Ugh, right? You know how that goes? You put all these things on this list. They're all expensive. You expect all your friends to buy these items for you. And let's be honest, are they things that you even use right away? Like silver and crystal and fine china. Like, how much fine china do you use when you've got five little kids in the home, right? Like, rarely ever at all, right? Like, why aren't there useful things on this registry? Like a man grill, right? Or like a kayak or a mountain bike or something I could use, you know? So it's all this frivolous stuff. And I was thinking about that fine china, right? Like, it's so beautiful, but it's rarely ever access. And I think sometimes we can have that approach with God, that we have kind of a fine china God, where we rarely access him. We rarely put him on display in our home and our family, except for maybe once or twice a year around the holidays. And this becomes this opportunity. Hey, how do we just keep it real as a family? I think one of the ways that your family can just practically keep things more real is to just pray together. You know, pray for each other, pray one-on-one. There isn't a day that goes by that my kids don't get the question from me, how can I pray for you? And sometimes I have to text it to them. Sometimes it's when we're in the car, but hey, how can I pray for you? And I am an imperfect father all the way. But this is one of those things where we just try to keep it real. And part of keeping it real is you got to be vulnerable as a parent. You have to share with them, hey, this is how you can pray for me too. These are the things that I'm kind of facing and dealing with. And you just kind of keep that vibrant conversation in your family with God, keeping it kind of vertical in how you're talking, how you're praying. We had one of these family gatherings at our home around the holiday. And you can imagine family gatherings. As a pastor, who do you think gets elected to do the prayer before meals, right? Like, I seem to draw that stick every time. And so this time I decided I'm going to just kind of turn it over to my kids. Like, hey, which one of you would like to pray for this meal? And one of my kids decided that they would say the prayer for the meal and kind of did something that I wasn't expecting. This child of mine decided to do what he had seen me do. He said, well, why don't we go around? Like, what kind of prayers are there? Like, who needs prayer? And so this kid of mine's asking the family members. I'm like, dude, like, you are a pastor. Like, you got to kind of wrap this up. And starts asking, like, well, how can I pray for you? And, of course, Grandpa chimes in, like, well, I have to wear these hearing aids. Pray that I get my hearing back. And Uncle Tim says, well, if you're praying for things, I'm bald as a cue ball. Pray that God would put some hair on my head. And this kid of mine takes it all seriously. They were just kind of joking. And he starts praying long form, like the food is getting cold, and praying for hair and hearing to be restored. And, you know, that's our home. But, you know, keep it real on your home front. And I want to invite the worship team to come up and just to lead us this morning as we go to God in a time of prayer. And just really as a community, as a church, as we think about this year, as we think about our homes, how do we plant spiritual roots? How do we just kind of take this idea that God has sown into us and then pass it on in a real tangible way into the next generation? I want to invite you to just bow your head and to pray with me, please. Father God, as our heads are bowed and as our eyes are closed, this is just a moment. It's a moment for every person here. God, I've been thinking about those who come here on a weekly basis, and many of them with young families, with young kids, many of them with challenges, many of them with fractures in their family. And God, a message like this can make you feel like, wow, I got to get on my game, right? I got to do more. And what I want to share more than anything, these words I keep hearing from God all this past week, and I believe these words are for you here today. It's just these very simple words. God believes in you. God believes in you. If you're a parent here today and you find that you just feel fragile and you feel racked, that God believes in you. And God doesn't need much from you. He just needs a life of faith and devotion. I'm just humbly saying, God, I want to seek you in every moment. God is not after perfect followers or perfect parents or perfect spouses. He's looking for those who be faithful. Whatever your pain or your struggle or your distance from God is, I want you to know God believes in you. God, I pray for this community. I pray for this year and this opportunity we have to draw closer to you as we draw closer in our families. God, would you lead us as we do the task of leading this next generation, Lord, in whatever context you've called us to. We're going to give you these words, these songs, Lord, from a place in our heart that is grateful. For no matter what our circumstances, we're going to find our joy in you this morning, Lord. We thank you for Jesus, the perfect example of a faith following after you. Help us to strive after him. It's in your name we pray.
This podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Visit bridgewaycommunity.org for more information and other messages.